I'm Christopher Lydon, your guest host on Tell Me About It until 2 o'clock this morning. The matter I would ask you and our guests to tell me about and share with each other for the next hour and a half is this subtle question of Jamaica's identity. Child of Africa and the British Empire, Jamaica is part of the Caribbean family, though it chose not to federate with its neighbor islands. It's just offshore the world's superpower, United States, and very much inside the zone of American television and American financial power. Further north, Canada is a friendly home away from home for many Jamaicans. But still, the links to London are strong, and the African roots go deep. So let's talk about the historical and emotional connections inside the head of this sovereign island nation of Jamaica. Where do you set the Jamaican perspective on the map inside your own mind? Give us a call at 926-2178 or 926-7615 or 926-8631 or the toll-free line 1-888-991-2080. Our guests in the studio are Amina Blackwood Meeks, the storyteller, and Jerry Small, the maverick historian and poet. Give them a call, and let's talk about what it means to be a Jamaican. Amina Meeks, who's the real Jamaican in 2001? What is that Jamaican's angle of observation on the world?
The real Jamaican is still evolving. The real Jamaican is neither simple nor simplistic. Is very complex but not complicated. The real Jamaican refuses to be globalized. Because the real Jamaican understands that we have survived too much, have learned too many lessons, have created too much in this part of the world to allow this part of the world and the powers that rule this part of the world to continue to treat us as if we were objects, as if we were property, as if we didn't think, as if we didn't have a culture, as if we're not the sons and daughters of original scientists and the builders of pyramids. The real Jamaica refuses to be boxed and labeled and put in his place.
Now, that's a lot of not things.
The real Jamaican is very positive. He's very positive about what he wants. There is something very positive about being a survivor. And the many not things are very important, because there are people and circumstances who keep telling us what we ought not to be. We ought not to behave as if we're people of dignity. We ought not to behave as if we understand oppression. We ought not to behave as if we have a voice. We ought not to behave as if we have the courage to dare to carve out an agenda ourselves.
Who says you can't do those things? Who says you're not supposed to do all that good stuff?
Christopher, welcome to Jamaica, but you are from a part of the world that has told us for a very long time. When in the 70s, for example, we tried to define and shape an ideological perspective.
We told you couldn't be Castro.
No.
We told you you can't smoke ganja.
Yes.
What else?
Well, I shouldn't say the word African. I shouldn't dress like this. I shouldn't dress like this. I don't know. That's a lot of it is their issue. A lot of it is how we understand their issue, and a lot of it is a fear, an unwillingness, an embarrassment, an arrogance to accept those very rich cultures and cultural forms that predated them.
The ganja part and the Castro part I threw in, but does the United States tell you you can't be African?
In a lot of ways, it does. In a lot of ways, it does. It tells us that we can't be economically independent. When we say, really and truly, we have a right to defend this little piece of red earth called bauxite. And because it belongs to us and because it's not going to last forever, we have a right to determine how much of it we mine over what period of time and what we charge for it.
Hmm.
They called us names.
There are several angles here, but I'm interested in the England connection, and I'd like to know a lot more about the African connection. I mean, there are facts here. The Marley connection with Zimbabwe, for example.
The one thing about
us. The Peter Tosh connection with South Africa. But you go ahead.
The one thing about us that we can't deny, and I'm saying this for a particular reason, the one thing about us that we cannot deny is the fact that we're African. You look at us and you have no doubt who we are, and that is who we are regardless of the unfortunate choice that history made about the place in which we should be born. And one of the things that the evolving Jamaican has to learn to embrace, accept, and celebrate is how much we have. And how much we have is a race and a nationality.
Hmm.
How much we have is an island and a continent. And we have to learn to embrace and accept that we have that all. I need to say this because this is the context of Peter Tosh and Bob Marley. And there is an approach to Peter Tosh and Bob Marley and Bonnie Wailer and Third World and Jimmy Cliff and Louise Bennett and all the mm-hmm. other wonderful people who represent and speak about us and speak on our behalf. There is an approach to them that treat them like something exotic, something different, something almost accidental. But they're not exotic, they're not different, they're not accidental. The circumstances that produce Jamaica is precisely the circumstances which have given them birth. And we need to recognize.
But let me ask you a dumb question. Are you more African than Cubans, say, or Barbadians, or African Americans?
I don't know what that means. I don't know what it means to be more African than Cuban.
Than the Cubans are.
I heard the question.
Okay.
And I'm saying that on one level, I do not know what that means. On another level, I quite understand what you're saying. You're saying that within the island of Jamaica, there are certain manifestations of what some of us like to call the African survivals, mm-hmm. which we do not see elsewhere. The use of the drums, some of the rituals, the kumina, the etu, that we do not see it as much in some Caribbean countries. But different ones of us maintain different things. Jamaicans don't maintain the attachment to Shango that the Trinidadians do, or the attachment to Yoruba that the Cubans do. But we're all part of the same fractured circles. And one of the things we ought to begin to see is that even if we don't have the same manifestations island by island, we are part of the same whole. So as a whole, we represent Africa in this part of the world. And we should not give in to saying who is more this or who have more what. I mean, my sister might have 10 pair of shoes and I have 5. It don't mean that she's not my sister. It doesn't mean that together we don't have 15 pairs of shoes. This is who we are, and we represent who we are differently because of our historical circumstances.
Jerry Small, join the conversation here. Amina says the real Jamaican is still evolving. What's your definition of the real Jamaican in culture, in politics, in family connection now?
Well, to say the obvious, there's no one Jamaican. That is saying, in other words, the same thing that she's saying. The Jamaican is still evolving. So there's no one Jamaican. And even me as an African, especially in my youth coming up, usually object to being even called Jamaican. And even though there was a lot of hypocrisy in some of the contrivances of the independence of 1962. The fact is that out of many one people reflect that there's no one Jamaican. Not that each one of the different minorities is equal in influence to the African majority, but that even among the African Jamaican is many different kind of African Jamaican, and them still end up as one people. And there's many different kind of Jamaican who is not African Jamaican, and them still subscribe to the mainstream. The mainstream of Jamaica is African Jamaican, and a lot of the minorities, whether consciously or unconsciously, subscribe to and are very comfortable with a very African type of social life that has evolved over the past few hundred years in Jamaica. Not far from perfect, but there's many. Just like how there's no one role model. Like some people say, boy, how can you have Bob Marley be a role model, a man who's smoking ganja and who have 13 different baby mothers and who is profligate and this, that, and that. There's no one role model. Mm-hmm. There could never be no one role model for any sensible nation. There couldn't be one role model for Americans. There can't be one role model for English people. There's no one role model. There are many role models. Many valid role models. Very different from one another.
Let me ask you a different thought. People are accustomed to seeing Jamaican track stars run under many, many different flags now. Every track team in the world, every great one has
every track point in the world have some Jamaican blood running in them vein and on them track.
What is the Jamaican thread that connects all of those runners?
If you take a note, most of the Jamaican accomplishment is explosive in the track, in the physical, is explosive. So you don't find many Jamaican long distance runner field events. For one reason, they are expensive to perfect the craft of long distance running, and feel it is far more expensive to demonstrate your adeptness as a sprint, as somebody with a sudden burst of speed or a big jump. It's far easier and more economical and you know, easily reproducible. So from time immemorial, Jamaican burst through that explosive kind of way, almost like a kind of what I'm called a shooting star kind of thing. And, it is similar to the aggression that is displayed in domestic violence and road violence and even the political violence of the people, and even the enthusiasm about discussion and music, anything. So that explosiveness and so on. See a lot of energy and a lot of quality. At the same time, we are very explosive and indomitable and so-called ungovernable. At the same time, we allow all kind of things to dominate us. It's a kind of contradiction, no? But that is very compatible with the explosive performance. You know,
a man in the music industry said to me the other day, "We are an excessive people." Is that a fair generalization, Amina?
It's never fair to generalize. It's never fair. I don't know what that means. We are an excessive people. I'm thinking about the point Jerry made about the explosive nature, and I think that what he's hinting at, implying, attempting to explore, is the fact of how much of who we are has been suppressed for centuries, and how much in the post-independence period, much of that needs to come to the fore. You're almost saying, "See me, I'm in a dead. This is what you have been hiding for so long." I don't know what is meant by excesses. We certainly have given to the world in every area of life, sports, culture, religion, language. What we have given to the world belies our size.
Well, popularly speaking, sir, you'll admit that we are at my excess.
Now, what do you mean by excess?
Hold on. Because you know the word, you know, there's no sense to be offended by the word. Because, you know, say, even up to a few years ago, and for several years, maybe for a decade, one of the most favorite expressions was, you know, to express affirmation about things. I said, boy, excess amount of music and excess amount of nice. You remember how much we used to use that word?
I think I just X amount, them say. Yeah, when I think about excess, I think
no,
I just.
Try and remember. Then you used to say X, you know, but even excess amount, that was a way of saying, you know. Girls like dirt and beer like sand, and you know, you remember them expression there?
A plenty, a whole heap.
Yeah, more like sand, mm-hmm. Like the sands of the seashore.
Mm-hmm.
So, we'll move on, no?
It's time for caller. The phones, if I may remind you, are 926-2178 and 926-7615. Caller, good morning. And thank you for joining us on Tell Me About It.
Hello, good morning. Hello?
Yes, yes. Tell us that we're talking about Jamaican identity.
Yes, I'm enjoying the program.
Good.
And you have two real Jamaican there who seem to understand the culture of our people and understand it in depth and really articulating to the point and the fact and our culture of our people that we are a survivor. Mm-hmm. And that when looking back at our historical background, where we are coming from and where we are at, and we have come a long way, and we are not a set of people who will allow ourselves to be pushed and boxed into the corner. We stand up anywhere in the globe and defend ourselves and our rights and our integrity, and we are real African people. And the fact that we unfortunately were brought on this side of the world in itself is a testament to the fact that how we survive and how we have excelled across the entire world, whether it is in sports, music, politics, anything at all, we have excelled. And when we look, that it's over 100 and odd years since we had received freedom from slavery. We have really put this country on the forefront in terms of the world. Britain once had the entire world. The map of Britain was red. Today we find out that the sun hardly can set on Britain because the whole empire has gone. Jamaica still stands, and after all the things that have happened to our people in terms of slavery, political victimization, racism, we still stand. And that's a real Jamaican. And the real Jamaican believes in himself because we are very talented people. The real Jamaican never, never believe that there is no hope for our people. Mm-hmm. We believe that there is still hope in this society. And the real Jamaican really don't listen and have no time for negative talks. We are a positive people.
Caller, can I ask, and with respect, and not to be negative either, but do real Jamaicans have faults?
Yeah, man, like any people in the world. So most of our faults we have been taught by the superpowers of the world.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, Henry Morgan, who was one of the pioneer. He was a pirate who came here and in this section of our Caribbean country in Jamaica, taught us piracy and how to go to the high seas and rob and plunder and rape and murder and to accumulate wealth and bring it back in terms of their country and amass those wealth and build their nation. No wonder we go to Britain and we work hard and try to take back some of that which was stolen from us. We are a survivor. We are historic people.
Mm-hmm.
We know what it is to have faults, because he who does nothing, there's no accusation made of him. And we have to do things in order to survive. We can't sit back and our law, our future, to be dictated by some so-called superpowers.
Yeah, let me ask you, and be blunt with me, what are you learning for good and ill from superpower U.S.?
I think United States, by me personally, is seen as the lamplight beast of the world, the demon of the world.
Mm.
The one that generates and created so many enemies across the world because of his double standard. One policy for this nation and another for that nation. One policy for one group of terrorists within a country and another for another. Replaced in so-called leaders within a clip of a finger, while those leaders have been trained by them and put them up as satellites, and as soon as there's a little problem, they remove them or put them in prison. For instance, the Panamanian president. United States have gone around the world and has been the policeman and has generated enemies. Because, not only because they're a superpower, but because they see themselves maybe as infallible. I don't know.
Connor, you've given our guests here a lot to chew on. Would you want to react, Jerry Small and Amina Meeks, before we take a break?
I want to remind us that it don't suit us to just focus upon our ideals, you know. Our ideals as perceived to have been accomplished. So therefore, you know, we talk of ourselves as a heroic people and so on. And then now that gives a lot to rest upon, and we rest a lot on that. We have so much more to do. Like slavery. Them said that slavery was given to us over 100 years ago. Well, slavery is a thing that you don't leave out of slavery unless you step out of it. So even after slavery was so-called abolished, it's only a minority of the population resist slavery up to now. So the majority of the population still susceptible to slavery. That's why Marcus Garvey would have to say, emancipate yourself from mental slavery. Because we thought ourselves of being emancipated from physical slavery. But a man like Garvey and ladies like Mrs. Garvey and Miss Garvey and all the ladies up to Amina, I have to remind the people them say, mental slavery still hold the majority of people. Where is a personal freedom is a thing people have a personally grasp and take. Freedom is a thing that you take, you know, it was inherited or get it from somebody else. So therefore, we're still on our way to most of the people are still on their way to freedom.
It's the complex nature of who we are, which we raised in the very beginning, that even during the time of slavery, it wasn't all of the enslaved who recognized that there was another way, who even believed that the loud-talking, bad-behaving, can't-feel-burning ones were going to succeed. But they benefited from the fact that this minority, I don't want to say a handful, this minority with a vision, did not give up. And so those of us who have the vision, those of us who, as Maureen Regan from that very beautiful group Sweet Honey in the Rock said, those of us who have learned to run before others must continue to run before others, otherwise none of us will benefit.
I'd like very much to ask you, Jerry, and you, Amina, too, when we come back after a break to talk about Marcus Garvey. That's an important point. It's an important life, obviously, but it's an important point that most people haven't had the kind of experience, the struggle themselves of finding that vision. We'll talk about it when we come back. I'm Christopher Lydon, talk radio host in the States, visiting in Jamaica, and privileged to ask you to tell me about it on this program. You can call in at 926-7615. We're talking this morning very specially about Jamaican identity in the year 2001. We're going to take a short break.
Radio RJR.
Weekdays from 10:30 a.m. to 2:30 p.m., you get direct access to RJR's hotline, interactive and ear-friendly radio. We pride ourselves in never speaking over your heads or down to you. Come back to your senses, where sensible and sensitivity are hallmark words that have made us Talk Radio's consistent number one. Call us on 926-2178, 926-8631, 926-7615, or 1-888-991-2080. Toll free, Mondays to Fridays from 10:30 a.m. to 2:30 p.m. and to share your views and concerns. We speak simple language and non-confrontational talk. That's RJR's Hotline with Barbara Gludon and Keith Smith. We don't just talk to you, we talk with you.
The big one, the 4-in-1 special, the quad-pack combo advertising package. Three radio stations with approximately 50% market share, and a TVJ also with approximately 50% market share. Advertisers, the quad-pack combo advertising package gives you reach and frequency at an affordable rate too. In other words, you're getting the... The quad-pack combo, RGR 94 FM, TVJ, Fame FM, Radio 2 FM. Advertising has never been so easy. Advertising has never been so affordable. Give us a call today at 926-1100 and ask for our dynamic marketing department. Over now.
So they couldn't fly in from Japan for the wedding, christening, graduation, or anniversary party. Doesn't mean they have to miss the occasion. Through Multimedia Jamaica Limited, sharing special events with loved ones or business associates anywhere in the world is a breeze. We will post your event on the World Wide Web for everyone or just someone special to share. They can see and hear everything. Call today, 926-1100, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. or 384-5530 anytime. Multimedia Jamaica Limited, a member of the RJR Communications Group.
All he studied was his speakers, his sneakers and clothes. He learned how to dress and he learned how to pose. He can't get no work, he can't get no job. He decided to steal and he decided to rob. But little black boy couldn't last long at all. The police put a bullet through his donkey head's skull. Little black boy, go to school and learn. Little black boy, show some concern. Little black boy, education is the key to get you off the street and off poverty. Little black boy, go to school and learn. Little black boy, show some concern. Little black boy, education is the key to get you off the street and all poverty. Was to conduct a maxi with a ring in his nose, a gold teeth in his mouth. He feel very proud when they call him a tout. So proud was the boy that the boy never learned. He could have worked hard and buy a maxi of his own. So he hustled for a dollar, he hustled for a smoke. He hustled so that he could buy a little coke. Now he hook on the coke and off the maxi. And one more little black vagrant in the country. Little black boy, go to school and learn. Little black boy, show some concern. Little black boy, education is...
This is Tell Me About It. We're talking about Jamaican identity, Jamaica's angle of observation on the world. I'm Christopher Lydon, your guest host again this week. Our guests are Amina Blackwood Meeks, storyteller and cultural activist, and Jerry Small, historian and poet. Give us a call at, all the lines are full, but the numbers are 926-2178 or 926-7615 or 926-8631 or 1-888-991-2080. Jerry Small, I'm glad you mentioned Marcus Garvey, who was terribly harassed by the FBI in his own lifetime, And he was marginalized in the United States. He's still a very important underground figure in the black American imagination, but much more so here, where he was born and where his remains are buried. Tell us the Marcus Garvey story and why he is so important in your own view of the world.
Well, two of the things that Jamaica be most famous for are two philosophical development, two of the most important worldwide philosophical development of the 20th century. Garveyism and Rastafari. Now one of the main reasons why Garveyism and Rastafari have so much impact both in Jamaica and the world is that because of the worldview that them developed. It was a unique in Jamaica, outside of Christianity, outside of Christendom and the churches in Jamaica. And even some of the African retention religions combined with the European religion, which manifested in revivalism and so on. Outside of those things affected by Christianity, which has a worldview, because you know Christianity have a worldview. Rastafari and Garveyism was the main thing in Jamaica that developed a worldview that helped Jamaicans and helped other people, especially black people, to understand the world and understand the world as one place and the dynamics of the world. So that is why even among non-white people around the world, Rastafari and even Garveyism has had an impact, because it presents a worldview, it presents a way of analyzing the world and interpreting events and evaluating events.
How does it frame the world reality for you today?
Well, first thing, I grew up from very early knowing that I am African. And I don't really argue much with people about them things. There's a lot of argument going on, but my days arguing with those things was about 35 years and 40 years ago. You know, when you have to argue and convince people. But afterwards, you leave that to other people, because other people have that work to do after, and other people have that work to do after. But I know without doubt, and it's mainly because of the exertion of Garvey and the Rastafari brotherhood and sisterhood, where I grew up so conscious knowing that I'm African. I don't have to argue about that. Because I know that all of the other minority them in Jamaica have them identity. Them not identify according to the color that them is. People name by the land where them come from. People don't name by color. Yet color is also an acceptable description. So anyway, Marcus Garvey grew up in Jamaica. Marcus Garvey grew up just as children usually do grow, accepting sincerity and so on. And when he reached a certain age, him realize that people separate by class and race and so on, and him get more and more mature, and him teenage, him come to Kingston and him meet upon more further realities of the working world. Eventually him leave and go to England and meet upon further realities. And him race consciousness grow in terms of not racism, but in terms of what them people need in order to escape restrictions and limitations that are fatalism. So now Marcus Garvey determined now, say, oh, I going to improve the Negro, I going to equip the Negro to improve himself. The more Marcus Garvey learned that there are other people around the world who have the same ideas. Because no matter how bright you are, no matter how much bright ideas you are, there are likely to be several thousand people around the world who have the same ideas as you. That's why it don't behoove none of us to believe that there is a God gift to the world. Because we is all God give, but whatever, the same source that you get your brightness from, it fall on other people. So now him find himself finding about George Washington Carver,
yeah,
and Booker T. Washington, and finding that there are people all around the world who are trying to work out some solution for the black people, just like him. So I'm trying to get in contact with them. Now, coming from Jamaica, he have a unique interpretation, a unique approach. Anyway, his approach is, I'm going to improve the Negro. So he formed an organization in Jamaica named the Universal. That means it's far bigger than Jamaica. He started in Jamaica, you know.
Yep.
And Jamaica sowed the seed in their mind. But he said, I'm going to form an institution, which is Universal Improvement of Negro, that association I deal with. A universal association that is dealing with to improve the Negro.
One God, one aim, one destiny, he said.
Yeah. So if you're going to relate to the black people and to the Jamaican, you have to communicate with them. So communication is a two-way thing. If you're going to relate to the Jamaican, you have to go identify and reassure him. Say, one God you're dealing with. If it's more than one God you're dealing with, the Jamaican go and get distrust alive. Mm. If I'm more than one aim you're dealing with, you can deal with more than one aim, you know, but they must be compatible one with another. But if you're going to deal with diverse aim, the Jamaican and the African and people of any race are going to be apprehensive about you. So this matter is a reassurance. Eh? One God we are dealing with. One aim we're dealing with, one destiny. And in other words, we're not aiming for all of us ending up as electronic engineer. When we say one destiny, we don't mean that everybody going to end up as radio announcer or track star. But one destiny, that destiny being to fulfill yourself. Now that whole destiny being to fulfill yourself is summed up in the word redemption. Can you know what redemption means? Redemption means getting back or achieving back what you had lost or what you have perceived to have lost. So one God, one aim, one destiny sum up the concept of redemption. The whole point of it being to improve the Negro. Now you can imagine Marcus Garvey reach America now with this aim. Just after the Second World War. Just when the black veterans coming home from the World War, having helped to win the World War, come home with all of the glory and so on. And when him go back in America, now him find himself being lynched and so on and so forth. So America, black America was very ready for this. It's not an original idea. You know. It had been around before, but here's a man now come with an extra talent, an extra gift of propaganda. Because Marcus Garvey gifted for the use of propaganda. He wasn't the most perfect organizer, you know, but he was a great propagandist. Mm. He wasn't the most perfect businessman, but he was a great propagandist. He wasn't the most perfect economist or any one of those other things, but one thing, he had the gift of propaganda.
Amina Meeks, is this a living inspiration for you today?
It certainly is. You mentioned the fact of Marcus Garvey and the ideas of Marcus Garvey being ridiculed in some quarters of the United States. And I think the first thing we have to do is to accept and recognize that right in the land of his birth, we're still fighting to get the teachings of Marcus Garvey accepted as teachings and not rituals, and accepted in there in the breadth and scope. And that Marcus Garvey is important because he was not just saying, make us all pack up on our ship and go back to Africa. He was addressing very important issues about personal and national development, about issues of self-esteem, about how to develop the expressive parts of the culture, about how to use all of the culture to enhance the development of people, about economic objectives, and all of those ideas, these visionary ideas of this visionary person called Marcus Garvey, are still very relevant, not only because we understand them and because we're trying to implement them, but if we look at Africa as a whole and we look at the original independent states of Africa, we will see how many of those leaders admit to being influenced by the economic teachings of Marcus Garvey, the social development teachings of Marcus Garvey, men like Nyerere and Kenyatta and all of those people who were exposed to his ideas, and those ideas are still very much alive.
We're talking about Jamaica's view of itself in the world as well as Jamaica's view of the world. We're talking about Jamaica's identity. Join us, please. Caller, good morning, and thank you for calling. Tell me about it.
Yes, good morning. Morning, everyone.
Morning.
Yeah, got it.
I got to tell you straight where I am coming from. This modern world that we're looking at right now came out of what is called the Atlantic Rim. Now, we, the Jamaican, is a part, came out of the Atlantic Rim, because the Atlantic Rim meaning the west coast of Africa all the way up, the next part of the Atlantic, which is Britain, all the way up. to over the other side where you call America, coming from way up Alaska down to Canada, right down to the Aztecs and the Inca, right down into South America, right? So we came out of the Atlantic rim. Now we were also transported from the rim to the center, right? And we, the Jamaican people, were the cream of the crop of that side of the Atlantic rim, and we know this right now. So one of the first thing about the Jamaican is we know we are upfront people, and we don't like no little guy come go on like say him don't know his place, because we upfront, and that is why everything we do, we want to be the best. If we're wearing clothes, is the best. If we're running, is the best. If we are philosophers, is the best, right? And the globalization thing, I don't agree with you, Amina, when you say we will not be globalized. We were the first global people. Jerry just said the Universal Negro Improvement Association, it passed global. It's universal. That means if you go up on Mars, it's up there, and if you go up on Saturn, it's up there. Right? So we pass global, and if we're going to look at globalization the other way, we are African people centered in Africa. It was us who globalized and mutated into the other people. So,
caller, I want to give our guests another chance here.
Yeah.
I fully understand the point the brother is making about the African being the original globalizer. I think if I put it that way, my brother, I can agree with you and make a separation between what I think you mean, with which I agree, and what I meant. There is a way in which the way globalization has been defined or redefined, to take off from where you're coming from. There is a way in which that definition is to dilute the essence of who we are, is to pretend and to get us to believe that, look, we are all here, one big happy out of many, one family. And because we are all this one big happy out of many, one national and international family, who we are as unique individuals is not important. And my position is that our uniqueness is what cannot be globalized. Our uniqueness is what we should defend, and not pretend that we do not understand that every single where there is war and strife in the world at this point in time, central to that war and strife is the identity of people and defending that identity. And that's what I meant. But I fully understand you and accept where you are coming from.
Caller, thank you.
Could I just say one other thing?
You may.
You see, I am not afraid that our uniqueness will be taken from us, because we gave the world a global music, and we gave the world two global thinkers in the persons of Marcus Garvey and Bob Marley. So globalization is what I want to embrace right now, continuing with that Jamaican spirit as one of the first people, right? And I want to embrace globalization now, and as a person do whatever I can do and make it a global thing.
Thank you. Very well said, and thank you for joining us. Forgive me. Sister P joins us from Port Antonio. Sister P is an historian, a folklorist, a cultural activist in Portland and in Jamaica and around the world. Sister P, welcome, and good morning to you.
Good morning.
Would you tell us about your work, your researches, and your the discoveries that you want all of Jamaica to know about?
Wow. First of all, I'd like to join. I'd like to just say something, comment on what Amina and Garnet were saying about globalization. In terms of globalization, I think what we need to clear up here is that Jamaicans have gone international. But yes, we do refuse to be globalized because nowhere in everywhere in the world that Jamaicans go, they remain Jamaican. I mean, at some point they will eat rice and peas on Sunday. At some point they will always refer to ackee, or there is ackee and ackee, or ackee and saltfish. So in that terms, we always maintain our identity, no matter even if we're in an international situation. Getting to my work, Chris. I've been going to Africa since 1992. Well, one of the things that I do. And basically that is because of my interest in the Jamaican heritage. Who are we as a people? Where are we coming from? And we have been told for so many years that the majority of Jamaican people are Ashantis. In my travels, I am now beginning to realize, after traveling further and being around other people, other African people from other nations other than the Ashanti nation, I'm beginning to identify that I am not so sure and I'm not so confident anymore, because it seems to me that so many of us are Ewe people. Hmm. From traveling into places like Togo and Benin, we seem to have similar behavioral patterns. There are also many people here that we didn't just come from the west coast of Africa. Many people even came from southern Africa, you know, eastern Africa, because they were brought to southern Africa, I mean to western Africa. So people are from northern Africa also. It's just that I think we have sort of confused the issue, because so many people were shipped from the west coast of Africa.
You know, it involves different religious traditions, musical and other cultural traditions. What is the importance of those distinctions, though, Sister P, to a Jamaican identity going forward?
Once we have accepted as a people that we are of African descent, there are many people who would refute that. But you take one look at us and you realize that we are of African descent. Okay, so we know that there are a few other people that were thrown into the mix, you know. Sometimes we wonder if this is what makes us. In Jamaica, we have a way of saying a person is good and evil. Hmm. They use that especially in country parts. They say, oh, that woman, she's good and evil, meaning that we're some of the best people on earth, yet still we have some tendencies, as we can see, to destroy ourselves. And, you know, we have to say that we have to recognize that, going back to, I think Jerry mentioned it, that we had this Sir Henry Morgan, which started off our history, or has played an important part in our history, coming down to the Irish, the murderers and the thieves who were brought here and got mixed with our people. Then, of course, we developed this tendency because we had to have something to keep us going through all of these years of slavery. We had to have that. It's the side of us that made it where nobody could push us around. We had to develop that. And that now comes through. It's in our music, you know, it's in our language. And They even in our music, the call and response, because sometimes, you know, I always like to say that, yes, reggae music has gone international, but it's not the only music in Jamaica. We see our Naya Bingi music, we see our folk music, that call and response, the whole thing with the drum. So all of that has come through right through until today.
Sister P.
Yes,
sir. How you do?
What a place to meet.
Yes, indeed. You know what I want to say? I want to say it's not just to develop. uh-huh. all of those things that you said,
uh-huh.
is to remember
yes.
and to reclaim.
Uh-huh.
Because I think that too often we talk about ourselves as if our history is just 500 years old. And we don't celebrate that in 1 million BC there is evidence of African toolmakers. We don't celebrate enough that in 10,000 BC we made the first calendar by African astronomers, etc., etc., etc. That when the Egyptian Empire was dwindling, the Angolan Empire was flourishing. And I think we need to remember that we had this glorious history and this glorious way of being before the interruption known as slavery. And that this pre-slavery glory is also part of who we are and part of what identifies us.
Definitely is. And this goes back to the part of where you say, what where you said earlier, that the Jamaican is an evolving
yes.
process, you know, because we even though there are some of us who know about that, for instance, the Dogon people from Mali who charted it, we know about like Timbuktu, the first university, the Dogon people who charted the stars,
mm-hmm.
the Timbuktu University, we know of these things, and I think what has happened to us is that we have gotten so where we have to wake up our people out of this mental slavery that we're spending a lot of time, more time than we really want to on that, that we sometimes forget to put the past that comes before that
mm-hmm.
to the forefront. So it's good when you do mention
that we
like
are
that.
Not passive recipients of history, but
right.
we have been active contributors.
We only have to go even back to the Egyptians, and we see what a contribution that we have made worldwide.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Jerry Small.
Yeah, I want to remind us all the time that just like how you recognize things evolving and evolution. We are both territorial people and we are nomadic at the same time. It's like a contradiction, but it's like a paradox, no? It's the same way, you know, I mean, a nomad way of life was a stage of development. The tribalist way of life with the paramount chief and so on is a stage of development. Monarchy and so on, that is only a stage of development. Creation never designed us to live on, you know, one family ruling us in perpetuity. That's one of the reasons why Haile Selassie himself did prepare both the Rastafarian in Jamaica and in people in Ethiopia, say, it's not all the days of your life you're going to live on that monarchy, you know. But some people are not ready for them idea. Some people believe they must live forever on a monarchy. That's why some people sit down and wait for Jesus to come rule upon a throne over them. Some hoping to rule beside him also. It's a danger even some of my Rasta brothers and sisters even fall into. Hoping to go back to Africa and rule over the other African them. We are still as a sit down and rule over African. No, this is not something going to go on forever. Same way now, we in Jamaica now, we face it. Although some of we quiet still. And we don't allow people to push us around. And yet, we do allow people to push us around. And we do allow people to dominate and violate our rights, and we do not stand up the way we stand up very good, you know, in some instances, and in the other way we just allow things to overrun us. So we have a lot left to be done. We must also know that some things, all things are temporary, so therefore we're not going to live in the same state at forever and ever and ever in perpetuity. And as I say, civilization and mankind is evolving in way of life. And it's working towards a day when everybody going to be free. So don't worry. Let us look forward for a day living under one family rule, no worse again and all them kind of thing. Then that is a primary stage.
We're going to take a short break. But I first want to thank Sister P for joining us from Port Antonio. Our guests in the studio are Jerry Small and Amina Equid Beeks. I'm Christopher Lydon. We'll be right back.
About my Christmas, I give you a gift. I have a vision. About my Christmas, I give you a gift. She was a youth, like any other youth.
as a speaker, he speak universally. Of your mighty race, you can accomplish what you wish.
I have a vision.
Of your mighty race,
I have a vision.
Of your mighty race,
I have a vision.
You can accomplish what you wish.
I have a vision.
You can accomplish what you wish. I have a vision about my cosmos. I yet have you.
I have a vision.
Yes, His Majesty.
I have a vision.
Yes, His Majesty.
I have a vision.
A emperor, a Haile Selassie.
I have a vision.
A emperor, a Haile Selassie.
I have a vision.
I have a vision about my cosmos. I have a
vision.
I have a vision about my cosmos. I have a
vision.
He was a youth like any other youth.
Radio RJR. The big one. The 4-in-1 special. The quad-pack combo advertising package. Three radio stations with approximately 50% market share. And a TVJ also with approximately 50% market share. Advertisers, the quad-pack combo advertising package gives you reach and frequency at an affordable rate too. In other words, you're getting the... The Quad Pack Combo. RGR 94 FM. TVJ. Fame FM. Radio 2 FM. Advertising has never been so easy. Advertising has never been so affordable. Give us a call today at 926-1100 and ask for our dynamic marketing department. Over now.
The Sprint Lucky Caller promotion is back. Yes, collect callers. Use Sprint for your regular collect calls to the USA, and you can be a lucky caller and win cash. The Sprint operator will let you know if you are a winner. In addition to all that cash for being a lucky caller, you can also be a winner with me, Richie B, on RJR. Join me Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays at 3:30 p.m. on the beat for the Sprint Lucky Caller promotion. All you have to do is answer a question related to this exciting promotion, and you can win a fabulous gift basket of Grace products. You know the way to call the USA. 1-800-877-8000. Hey, the Sprint Lucky Caller promotion is back. Don't miss it.
If over 90% of us in Jamaica were fully literate, what would that be like?
There'd be less violence. People would make more intelligent choices. Stop with the idiot things with a cut off.
Exactly. So can we see the big picture?
Stop thinking more me, me, me. Don't be selfish. Don't be so selfish.
Think about our beautiful country and be a part of making it better for all of us.
By joining up with the 100% Literacy for Jamaica program.
So this is how the 100% Literacy for Jamaica program works.
There are marked book barrels in all Sangster's bookstores here at the radio station, 32 Lyndhurst Road, Horton's Pharmacy in Mandeville and Spanish Town, and we'll tell you where else.
Go through your books and pick out reading material and storybooks in good condition for children 4 to 11 years of age, or you can...
crying out loud, you can just purchase a few books for the kids. What's it gonna do? Short your lunch money?
Take the books to any one of the 100% book barrels and drop them in. You can also volunteer to read to kids in your parish.
Yep. You can call the hotline, 806-1493, and tell us where and who you are and when you can reach the kids in school on a Friday or the parish library on a Saturday.
Be a part of the 100% Literacy for Jamaica program.
It's the thing, haven't you heard?
The full on training.
Yeah.
For more information, call the hotline, 806-1493.
806-1493. Zine, be cool like that.
Yeah.
This is Tell Me About It. I'm your guest host, Christopher Lydon, from Boston in the States. Our guests in the studio are Jerry Small and Amina Blackwood Meeks. Will you forgive me, please, for missing your name, Amina?
It sounds like Biko, and I'm related to Steve Biko, so it's all right.
We're just playing with sounds here, you know.
Before we took the break, Chris, if you'll allow me, I want to make a comment on something very profound that Jerry said, and it's about the fact that some of the brothers and sisters expect to go back to Africa to become rulers. And we need to give thought about, really, when we say go back to Africa, what are we expecting that we're going back there to do? And we have to begin with a recognition, I think, of what Africa needs. And Africa needs people with skills, people who can read and write. Africa needs people who can fix care. It needs scientists, it needs teachers, it needs doctors, it needs social workers, it needs lawyers. It needs skills that contribute to development, so that even if you go back and you become a ruler, you're not in danger of being enslaved once again. That's one point I wanted to make. And then it also brought to mind something which the South African ambassador said at the speech he gave at a function on African Liberation Day. He said, one of the best things we who live outside of Africa can do for Africa is to make sure that we are economically liberated. Mm. And we need to think about that very carefully.
Mm. We're talking about Jamaica's view of itself in the modern world. Give us a call at 926-7615. Caller, good morning. You're on the air. Thank you for joining us. Hello?
You couldn't have two better guests.
Uh-huh. Thank you.
Miss Meeks, Miss Small, they know definitely what they are talking about. But us Jamaican, a lot of us, you cannot mention the word Africa. They will definitely tell you they don't know not about Africa. Them is a born Jamaican. If you should take a poll now, you would see definitely what I am talking about.
But now, what point do you want to make about Jamaica's identity?
You know, what I want to say is that I know personal. My descendant was from Africa. A lot of us know that, but also a lot of other Jamaicans don't believe in the African thing. See? About Marcus Garvey now, there's so much to talk about Marcus. He has done it, I would say, single-handedly to put us on the map. You know? So, all of the callers that call, I really support what they said. And I definitely support what Jerry and Miss Meek said.
Well, thank you. Thank you, and we're going to move right on. Good morning. You're on Tell Me About It.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning.
Yes, I'm saying morning to everybody in the house.
Good morning. How are you?
Not too bad. Yeah. Especially Lady Meeks. Lady Meeks.
Yes.
Okay, I've been listening intently to all the pronouncements about being Jamaican and all of that, which is good. But it's more for the elders. My concern, Lady Meeks, is for the young.
Uh-huh.
Their lifestyles,
mm-hmm,
that they're living.
Mm-hmm.
Wonder how Jamaican these youngsters feel. Is anything being done? I'd like to know from you. Teaching them the Jamaican, you know, the Jamaican psyche, what it means to be Jamaican. Because it's more to me, what I see these days is more the bling bling, so you know that term.
Yes.
And the BET and the MTV kind of lifestyle. That sort of thing that has engulfed us.
Uh-huh.
You know? Well, what has been done?
It's a question
Laura,
about...
Thank
you very much. It's a question about us, isn't it? I mean, our children can't be something which they haven't seen manifested around them. And there are many reasons for it. One reason is that some of us tired for fight. and so we relax. Another possible reason is that we almost expect our children to learn what we know by osmosis, and that don't really happen. And a third reason may be that we do not grasp sufficiently in a practical way that freedom and emancipation are not events, but they are processes. And they constantly need to be defended. So what I'm saying is, when we raise questions about what are our young people doing, we really are raising questions about what kind of examples are we setting.
Do you want to speak to the BET MTV point? I mean, not just examples. What about what they're watching on television? Almost all the television I can see in Jamaica comes from the States.
You can't. It don't make no sense to resist foreign cultural experiences, you know? But it's only because there's a vacuum. Because you leave a vacuum, that's why we're in fear. Because we leave a vacuum. It is by default that our children become swamped by these things. It's supposed to be available. All of the different knowledge and experience supposed to be available, but it's not an empty vessel them supposed to come and find. So because we neglect our own development and so on, that's why the influence.
The caller, I want to know what you're going to
say. That's why the influence of these things are we feel them so great, you know, because of default. With me personally, I don't know if I could have survived so good in America. Because I don't enjoy living as a minority. Yet, even in Jamaica, we are a part of the African majority. The condition is still far from perfect. And even though America make available far higher standard of living, far higher standard of civil rights and human rights than exists in Jamaica, it would be very almost traumatic for me to live in a country like America as a minority. But at the same time, I allow myself to be almost lulled by being a part of the majority in Jamaica, and I have been part of the general lull in the population that has taken place since independence, the last 40 years. Which that kind of lull of being the majority and so on.
I don't think we've answered the caller's question.
No, the question is, what are we going to do about it?
About our kids.
Okay.
I want to take another caller We'll come back to that. Welcome to Tell Me About It, caller. Good morning.
Hello, good morning.
Morning.
Hi, my dear friend Amina. She'll show pick up my accent.
Hi. How are you?
Sister, and I know after I've spoken, you still love me the same. I hope so.
We'll see. Speak first.
Because I need to make one point. I'm so caught up in your discussion here, you know. And I'm so emotional by now that I 5 minutes ago, I ran to my spouse, who is a real mix-up Jamaican between Chinese, African, you name it. And I said, listen, who run first? Me run first? You run first? What are we doing here? Because there's a talk show which totally excludes any kind of other voice who has not the roots deep in Africa and all the callers so far. So I'm really, really glad that I could get through and just put in a couple of points of people who live here who not have necessarily roots in Africa, but we just try to strive for one world and one love and one peace and one human family. And it's a little bit, what shall I say? I said, I wish that the whole nation and many other nations could be blindfolded for 1 week. When I teach, I teach in an international school. So, you know, I have them from South Africa to Sweden, to Peru, to Japan, every nation I have in my classes. So we are just pretending in the first exercise, we're all blind and blindfolded or blind. And I described to my kids I don't remember that I chose my heritage. Maybe, you know, there's theories and other persons. But I say that what counts is the soul and our inside, and our skin is a stocking, which was just put onto us for challenges, maybe for many reasons. It's because I want to ask, from which category of mixture is one declared African or not? Because my children... I threatened my father. I was such a revolutionary child. I threatened my father. I will once have three children from three different I say one Chinese, one African, one European. So this, and then what I got was, in my children, mix up all three races. My children know that they are African, Chinese, European. And we live right here in Jamaica happily since 16 years. And my kids are very much Jamaican. But are they these Jamaican whom you speak the whole night long to tonight? I don't know if they would listen to it, what they would say after the show.
I still love you very much. But you know, Peter Tosh is right. Everyone is crying out for peace. None is crying out for justice. If the history of the last 500 years had not been what it had been, then we could talk about all the nice things about there being one Jamaica. But there is that history of the last 500 years, and there is a way in which the whole world is sorry about other things. We're sorry about Japan, we're sorry about the Soviet Union, the Pope is sorry what him do to the rest of the Christian world, and nobody has said to the African people, you know, we're really sorry about what has happened to you. Even if them don't say what we have done, nobody has even acknowledged that there is something to be sorry for. That's one point I want to make.
But I mean,
the second, no, let me, you spoke, let me answer. The second thing I want to say is, when the Chinese get up and they establish their various kinds of societies and them have them cricket match with Chinese cricket club and Indian cricket club, nobody say, oh, but what's going to happen to me? Wait until the black Jamaican historical fact now get up and say, but I want to have a cricket club too, then there is a problem. The point I'm making is, you have a right to claim and defend what you want to claim and defend without my feeling excluded or offended by it. And you therefore have to allow me that space to claim who I am, to talk about who I am, to talk about who the 98% of people who I am, what they've been through, what they represent, what we aspire towards, without feeling isolated, excluded, or offended.
I'm neither isolated, excluded, or really offended, because I love this country too much, otherwise I wouldn't be here. And but I said I would have wished to hear one voice or more, on a third person on the program, to just chip in a little bit, the voices from these other people who strive, because it is, the topic is, I believe, it's the real Jamaican and the future Jamaican of what we're gonna be. And what we all gonna be at the end, it must be like what the first man on the moon said. I saw one wonderful Earl, but no borders and no countries. This will be the goal. I know we have a far way to go, and all of us, you know? But all of we who live here and we strive in the arts, like all of us, like you and me, I mean, we then have to really, in some moments, really try to gallop on, not even move on. Move on is too slow. We have to start galloping forward in order to come out of this, because if I turn back, I have a government in my Austrian country, which I did never want. So when I go home, so I feel funny when I go to my border, you know. I bought a cover for my passport. Say I never vote this government, because it's crazy what's going on there. So it's crazy what's going on here. I'm still fine in all of this, but the idea is, I wish that we can just sort of have still within all of this, working out the history, which has been horrible, cruel, dramatic, and still is going on. But it's going on within the own people. Why my housekeeper must say she would not wish to work for one of their own, them exploit her too much. So there's a whole heap to think about too, that the slavery and the exploitation has sort of, you know, gone so deep into people that they even take it out on other people as an aftermath.
Call,
I don't know, am I seeing it right or wrong?
Carl, I wish we had all day and all night, but I'm just so glad you joined. We want every voice, and we thank you for yours.
Thank you. I feel a little better, but Amina knows, and Cherry, that, you know, we are just brothers and sisters, you know, wherever we come from, you know.
Calm your husband down and take the rest of the night off, as we say. Thank you enormously for joining us.
You're most welcome.
And tell me about it.
Good night.
You're still my sister. Still
I
love
know,
you very much.
I know, we are.
But you see, this thing about galloping, yes.
We're going to go galloping still.
That is perhaps part of the problem that we have, that many of us gallop. up and leave others behind. And in the end, we are only allowed to move as fast as the slowest amongst us. And so we have to consider where the slowest amongst us are.
That's true as well. You know, I'm still for post-paced, you know, but sometimes I feel, you know, when things get a little stuck for me, I feel we need to gallop, but I still take your point the same.
Caller, thank you.
Okay, you're welcome.
And good morning.
Good night.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Okay.
And welcome to you on Tell Me About It. Thanks
Hello.
For calling. Welcome.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi.
You have a two-blooded mongrel on your hands. I don't know what I'm going to do with me. Because me have everything. Me a Jamaican, me a African. Me have everything.
Okay.
From the Jew, go back to the European. Go back to the Red Indian, go back to... There's nothing I don't have. My genetics is inexplicable. And I refuse to say I'm one. I love what comes out of Africa. I love what the history of all my fellow human beings. I am one of those who have galloped ahead.
Hmm.
But I'm going to tell you something about our children. We have to start preparing them for when somebody comes from up yonder and say, no, these are all earthlings, and put us all in one pot. In any case, because it so happened, it so happened, we soon meet another civilization, probably higher than us. And how would we like to feel if they say you are all earthlings? We have to prepare ourselves to be unified, to meet that. That's what our children have to meet.
You mean we've got to be ready for the Martians?
Not the Martians. They're coming from further than that.
Jerry?
From the stars, darling. Believe it or not. Believe it or not, ask any scientist. We are preparing. Ask the bigwigs in the big countries if they are not preparing for that.
Hello, milady.
Yes, sir.
Regardless of if our next civilization is even more advanced than...
Mm-hmm, plenty more.
No. Hello. Listen here. Regardless of a civilization even more advanced than our one,
mm-hmm.
One thing we're being born with, there's no being no superior. I was listening to you. That's why I get understanding of you. And I appreciate the understanding of you. So there's no civilization, there's nobody who superior. Otherwise, I'm going to stop talk. There's no people or beings who are superior to me and my family. And now, true, I claim equality with any being in the earth.
I'm not in the stars.
Yeah, so if anybody even come here with a superior civilization, I am not underneath them, so I don't fear them. Just like all now, whoever create me, the creator who create me, I don't fear him or her neither, you know. Because if them create me, I am not inferior to them. I don't mean that I am as good as them, you know. Because I make mistake, I'm a frail. But I am no slave of them, because them couldn't be my creator and I'd be a slave of them. So if we meet up on a more advanced civilization, they are not our superiors. That's why even globalization, I don't even too fear it, because I know, say, whatever take place, me and my people have a duty to control some aspect of the globe.
I want to ask, say, or just in what time we have left, I'd like to say, I mean, we've talked about Africa, we've talked about a superior people coming from the stars, but in the meantime, Jamaica's living, 500 miles off the shore of Florida and the superpower that runs the world. How does Jamaica feel about that? There are probably more than 500,000 Jamaicans in the States, 400,000 in Brooklyn alone, I think. A lot of them in Boston, where I come from. There are a lot of family connections. You can't meet a Jamaican that doesn't know somebody well in the States. And yet, I find a funny ambivalence, and maybe all the more since September 11th, about Uncle up there. How do we feel about it, Amina?
I think that one of the things that always amuse me is the contradiction in the term superpower. or you can be super of one. America have this view of itself that is just really amusing, that they have a basketball match, the East Coast versus the West Coast, and it's a world tournament, a basketball. So there is something that we have to deal with. But, you know, it links to a question two callers before asked, and it's about how do our children learn to be? You know, the way uncle up there behaves, one of the things our children learn to be is bullies. You don't understand somebody's point of view, you talk louder. You know, you drop some things upon them that make a whole heap of noise.
You're blaming America for that? I mean,
and that you drop some things upon them that make a whole heap of noise, and somehow that makes you a superpower. The superpower says things that it doesn't live up to. We talk about innocent until proven guilty. And then we look at what has happened since September 11th, and we look at all the evidence that them said them have, which the rest of us don't see, don't understand, haven't been exposed to, but we see where they have condemned them. I look for one man who them say is guilty of all of this thing, and them go and drop a whole heap of bombs upon innocent people, and then in search of this one man whom they have not yet found, and then now them drop some teddy bears and some peanut butter, and we're supposed to be respectful of that. And then them not quite finish that job, but them begin to tell us that, you know, Saddam is next, you better watch out. And we have to really begin to ask ourselves if all of these discussions that people like the Rastas in Jamaica have been having for so long about a one world government have any truth to it, and if the rest of us are going to spend our lives as little subversives, you know, like our foreparents did, telling Anansi stories as a way of surviving or as a way of plotting how we're going to get out of this thing. It's some serious issues which it raises.
Jerry Small.
The United States, our people, majority of people practically worship the United States because of the high level of standard of living and the high level of civil rights that a citizen enjoyed here. So the majority of people idealize United States, as I said, because of high standard of living and high respect for the citizen. But it's ambivalence because we know we are not determined to build that high level of standard of living and to build that high level of citizen rights. The citizen rights that we crave and that we envy America for is something that them sit down and design and work for. Even though it did exclude black people, you know, when they were designing it, it excluded black people. But by virtue of the fact that it was rights ascribed to humanity, eventually the black people in America was able to fight and claim it as humans. So the people in America, even after raping and running out the indigenous red Indian and stealing his land, came to terms with reality one day and said, let us set out some ideals of how we want our country to be. Now he designed that for himself, but eventually both the red Indian, who is not an Indian, and the black man, who is not really black but is African, was able to claim those same rights of the white heartland by virtue of being humans and attain the majority of those rights, even though there's still some discrimination and there's still some two-thirds of a man kind of status. But the majority of the American citizen on the whole is now enjoying the rights of the white man. In other words, every citizen in America is an honorary white now, or can be an honorary white. Not true?
Yeah, interesting.
Yes. So, as I say, we now in Jamaica crave that standard of living, crave that standard of civil rights, but we have not decided to secure it and build it in Jamaica. At the same time, practically worshiping America, we also, there's a part of us that resists that domination that seems to be the right of the strong over the weak. Now, the Garveyite and the Rastafarian has been two of the main people in Jamaica, especially for the 20th century, who has been enunciating the ideal of world citizenship. In other words, eventually and ideally, we are citizens, or we deserve to be citizens of the world. This was an idea enunciated both by Marcus Garvey, but even more so by Haile Selassie. As I heard Jim and Bob Marley's music about war, that until these things are achieved, the dream of world citizenship shall be a fleeting illusion. It's Selassie words those. So as I said, now the Rastafarian and the Garveyite in Jamaica has been reiterating the whole concept of world citizenship. And that is, but we are yet to be determined to establish that in Jamaica. Because we still look to representatives and rulers and leaders.
I'm just wondering,
to hand down and to cede certain things to us. We don't understand that as we have to seize the situation and make the situation what it's supposed to be. No leader going to deliver, and there's no leader, no Rhodes Scholar, or anybody who's going to deliver any great rights to us. And furthermore, these leaders and Rhodes Scholars are supposed to be servants, but it's because we are not good supervisors. But still, we're either supposed to make this place stay like we want it to be, or if you so choose, you return to where we came from, which is Africa, and try and make that place what it's supposed to be. But it's not a easy job, and it's not a one-generation job. So whatever you decide to do, you know, it's a long haul. But you know, so it's work it requires. It's not a pie in the sky, or a dream thing, or when Jesus come back, everything going to be all right.
In the meantime, though, you're living with the United States, and for the moment with the Bush administration. A lot of Americans worried that George W. Bush had almost withdrawn from world citizenship before 9/11, from the Conference on Racism, from the Landmines Treaty, from the global warming rules, not to mention the ABM Treaty, this kind of thing. Since 9/11, he's back in the world with a very heavy hand. Can this continue?
Look here now. Politically, he was in trouble from the beginning. And this has come like a godsend, putting him back on center stage. But also, the honeymoon soon be over. Don't you know that? That honeymoon that him is enjoying now soon be over. If he even get Ben Laden tomorrow, that honeymoon that him enjoy and that coalition and soon be over. Well, I don't know. It may be sooner, it may be later. But the fact is that it's a temporary thing. It's a rallying.
Because people will wake up to the basis on which the honeymoon exists. And yeah, the honeymoon exists. How many thousands of Arab men are in prison since September 11th without any charge being laid against them? How many of the very rights that Jerry spoke about are being trampled upon?
Right now in Jamaica, the very Jamaican government and governments to be are going to follow that same line and are following that same line. That if you want good civilization in Jamaica, you have to go give up some of your civil rights and some of your human rights. Now, this is a sleight of hand. You know? But the same thing Bush doing, you know? So I'm not accusing any one political party or one leadership in Jamaica. This is a tendency. This is a tendency of power. Power is magnetic. And so therefore, power always seeks to attract even all else other power to itself. So therefore, the bargain and the deal that is going down is this. If you want us to be safe from terrorism, whether it is Bin Laden terrorism, or whether it is so-called narco-terrorism in Jamaica, you have to give up some of your rights. This is a sleight of hand that even Bush up there and our local leaders are proposing to us. Because what? It's a shortcut that they want. But they are enjoying the heights of power, you know? But at the same time, they want us to concede even more human rights and civil rights and due process in order to put them in a stronger position to rule the island. In other words, here I'm talking about law and order. You know what they mean? You know what they mean by law and order? They mean laws and orders.
And the disempowerment of the masses, that you surrender all kinds of things. And one of the things you surrender is your ability to independent thought. Yeah. So you make somebody else tell you way of a thing. That if you're not on the side
because
of us,
they know best.
If you're not on the side of us, you support terrorists, and then you can't even say to yourself, well, what kind of choice is this? Is there another way?
Can I just tell you a little story and ask you a question? Driving back from St. Elizabeth this weekend, the car I was in was stopped three times by roadblocks by police checking, presumably for ganja. They let us through each time after after a look. But I just wondered. Now, the right to smoke ganja is not the highest of all human rights, but I wondered, why does Jamaica allow this kind of police burden on itself at the behest of the United States? And would, you know, would Frenchmen allow wine to be, you know, grabbed off their table because the United States had decided to prohibit alcohol? Do Jamaicans object to this, and do they blame Uncle for the ganja rules?
May I say this?
You may.
That the everyday harassment of the citizen over ganja is not really a direct result of America's demand or no shipwright or kind of thing. That is how the police and the powers that be exert them authority over the citizens and say, mind yourself, you know, it's me in charge, you know. If I feel for let you go, I let you go. If I feel for take $1,000 for you, I take $1,000 for you. Now, at the same time, as we know, the demand by America in about 1980 coming up, that ganja must be wiped out. It cut the economy of Jamaica, the ganja export and import of American money, economy of Jamaica. And it also gave rise to a lot of cocaine usage and trafficking. Because since the ganja mustn't traffic out, the cocaine traffic through, and you get a commission out of it, and the whole cocaine culture come in the 80s come up. Come in more than before, right? But as I said, that is where America did exert a lot of imposition on us in terms of ganja and cocaine and so on. But this general harassment every day, even the stopping of the motors and say, you was speeding, you know, or the stopping of the motors and say, your insurance up to date and so on. In Jamaica, this is not about making the road safer. In Jamaica, the harassment by you about certain laws and orders is not about making making life more peaceful and more safe for the citizen. It is about exerting authority that you know who is in control.
Mm-hmm.
The policeman in Jamaica is not the servant of the community. The policeman is there to make you know, mind yourself, you know. You're just an ordinary little citizen. You're just an ordinary, in Jamaica, ordinary and little and citizen are synonymous. You understand me?
I do.
In America, a citizen is the highest accolade that you can attribute to your fellow human being in America. Citizen.
That's what we say.
Yeah. No, America is not perfect, you know, but for sure, citizenship is the highest calling that I know of in America.
Yes.
Now, in Jamaica, membership is the highest calling. Now, we are determined. There are some of us who are determined to show. Even though I am African and I don't intend to stay all the days of my life, wherever I am a citizen now. And there are some of us who are determined to prove and show that citizenship is the highest calling. And citizenship is superior to membership. So you're like a membership where you exert permission. You're a member of the police force, a member of the party, or a member of the right class, or the right family, or an old school tie. We go and show that citizenship is more important than any of those.
Jerry Small, you're a tough act to follow, but I want to give Amina Blackwood Meeks the last word.
What do you want the last word to be on?
Jamaican identity in the next 100 years
is something which we all have to decide for ourselves in the end, which is how we started, that you look at us and the one thing about us which is so obvious is the one thing which we want to deny, and we'll come and we say, but mix up, you know, we have 40,000 bits of other things, and perhaps what it really means is I don't want to accept my Africanness, and that we need to embrace and accept all of who we are, that we have a race and a nationality, that we have an island and a continent, and we need to reclaim the glorious history we had before it was interrupted by slavery.
Amen, and thank you enormously. It's a great privilege to call myself the host of this conversation. Thank you, Jerry Small. Thank you, Amina Blackwood Meeks. Thank you, Sister P. And thanks to all the callers and the listeners. Thanks to my producers and RJRs. We'll join you again tomorrow morning, just after midnight. Thank you. And June Hines will be back after a short break. Hey.
What you mean?